like she didn't want me around. So I was pretty much alone a lot, stayed outside either on the roof or in a tree or in my tree house or made friends with ladybugs, just stayed away. I remember feeling empty and lost most of the time growing up. Didn't really know where I fit in, didn't really know if I was supposed to be there. And that was, you know, my own home. Really didn't feel like I fit in there. So I was pretty much a people pleaser. I didn't get into any trouble, really, as a kid or growing up or my adult life, for the most part. I tried to stay status quo and do the right thing, whatever the hell the right thing was, being a preacher's kid. 10 years old, I realized that I was gay and couldn't be really gay and, as a preacher's kid, couldn't be gay in my family. That was definitely would send me to hell in a heartbeat. So I never told anybody. I just hid it, and like I said, I just tried to do the right thing. I felt obligated to do what I thought others expected of me. Whether or not they expected it of me or not, I don't know. But I thought they did, so I tried my best to live up to what I perceived as others' expectations. Lot of obligation, like I said, felt a lot of obligation to do certain things. So basically the first man that told me that he loved me, I married him. That was what you do. You get married, you know, the guy says he loves you, you're supposed to marry him. I was 19. I had my first drink at 18. Wasn't that great of a drink, it's wine coolers. But my first real drink, I remember I was at a party and it was a daiquiri and it turned my entire face numb and I thought, whoa, this is really weird. I started drinking alcoholically at 19. I drank because I didn't want to feel. I'm sure that all of you can relate to that. I didn't want to feel. I didn't want to hurt. I had a lot of insecurities I was running from and hiding from. I had a lot of loneliness, a lot of unhappiness, a lot of anger, a lot of bitterness. Again, I felt like there was really no place that I belonged. Ultimately, honestly, I drink because I'm an alcoholic. That's why I drink. The other things are just things that happen. I drank for 30 years, so my whole adult life, I'm 49 years old, thus the midlife crisis. Thank you very much. And the awesome part, I'm really not awesome, but that was Pam's input. She asked me to say this. I'm kidding. I drank for 30 years. I was very high-functioning, drunk. I went to work every day, made something of myself, whatever that was. I paid my bills, came home, drank every night, got drunk, went to bed, did it all over again. It was like a 30-year repeat. Didn't really have any of the legal drama like the DUIs or any of that kind of stuff. Never had kids. Families all lived out of state for the most part, or I lived out of state. So that was me, just sitting there drinking. Couple of marriages, couple of divorces. I finally came out to everybody that I was gay. Dropped some family members, dropped some friends. Some people supported me. Didn't matter, I needed to live my true self. Had more relationships. My family said my picker was broken. I always picked the wrong people. My life was actually okay. It didn't seem to be unmanageable. It was okay, you know. I paid my bills, I worked, and that's what I drank. My disease progressed, obviously. I discovered this really amazing thing called day drinking. First, it was the weekends, and I found out I could get up in the morning and have a Diet Coke, and then I could start drinking. And I'm like, wow, this is really cool. I could be drunk and do housework. I could be drunk and do yard work. I could just be drunk. And it was great. Then I went to weekday day drinking. Drinking at work. I used to carry a bottle of vodka in the back seat of my truck underneath the seat, and I'd go out for a smoke break and drink a little bit. I'd come into work drunk, you know. Had to have a few shots before I ever even went to work just to kind of be able to really get straight with it. The last 10 years of my drinking, I knew I was an alcoholic. I prayed that I would be sober. I prayed every day that God would make me sober. Didn't have any real faith that He was going to do that, because the God that I was raised with was, again, a hellfire and brimstone God. And I was gay. I was a drinker. I didn't go to church. So, of course, I was going to go to hell. So He didn't, in my opinion, didn't like me, didn't love me, didn't want me, was definitely not going to do anything for me, but I still prayed that I would be sober. I wanted to be sober. You know, my drinking impacted every relationship I was in, whether or not they mentioned it, whether they said anything. There were some people that did say something to me, you know, they would say, I don't like you drinking, I'm going to leave if you drink, I'm going to leave if you can't quit drinking, I don't like when you get like this, when you drink, you change into this other person, and they all left, and I was still there with my vodka. I was very selfish. I chose my vodka over everything. And I'm not telling you guys anything you don't know or haven't experienced. We've all been down that road. Then came the last 6 months of my drinking, which I'm going to say some things that are not meant for anybody to feel sorry for me, because everybody has this happen in their life. November 2017, my brother died of alcoholism. It was not a pretty death. When they called me and said that they said, we have an emergency over here, we think Sarge has passed, and I said, I'll be right there. And thankfully, he just fell asleep on his couch and didn't wake up. But the mess that he was in and left was ugly. Empty vodka bottles everywhere. You know, he'd been in diapers for the last year, hadn't been able to walk. So he definitely couldn't get up and change his diapers. He was so proud that he would not let anybody help him. Wouldn't let me help him. He had a friend that would come over and help him. But I remember sitting there on a little stool. I flipped it up to the couch. And, you know, alcoholism is, it's not a peaceful career. It's not a peaceful function. It's not a peaceful disease. It's agonizing, and it's anxious, and it's everything you can think of is bad. But he looked very much at peace. And I was grateful that he was gone for him. He didn't have to go through that anymore. He didn't have to worry about the next drink. He didn't have to have that guilt, that shame anymore. And I remember pulling the stool up to the couch and just kind of petting his head and telling him that I loved him. And you know what? You would think that would have been my bottom. You think that I would have gone home right then and there and thrown out all my vodka and said, screw this shit, I am not going to go out like that. I didn't. I'm an alcoholic. It wasn't my bottom. I drank more. I came home. Well, I went and told my mom that her son had died. My mom was in a nursing home at the time. And I kind of spent the last couple of years kind of you know, ferrying them around every 2 weeks, taking them shopping, picking my mom up, taking her and my brother shopping, and different things like that, just kind of doing things for them. When my brother died, I went back home and I discovered around-the-clock drinking. I went to bed with my vodka and I drank and I went to sleep and I woke up and I drank more and I went back to sleep and I woke up and I drank more and this went on. Mom would call me, I wouldn't answer the phone. I'm sure other people called me, they told me they called me. Maybe I told them, maybe I didn't, I didn't know. But I told my mom I was sick. Because I would always go see her. I would always go see her every single morning since she had been in the nursing home on my way to work. And she would be like, honey, you gonna come see me today? And I'm like, you know, Mom, I'm sick, I can't. I mean, little did I know, I really was sick. I took a leave of absence from work. Thankfully, thank God, I was able to do that. I sobered up halfway, sort of, kind of, every once in a while to still go take my mom shopping. It wasn't as much. I wouldn't go see her as much. You know, take care of the bare necessity things that had to be taken care of so that I would have a home to live in to do my drinking. I didn't care what happened anymore. I just... like, I was shirking all responsibility. I was done. I was done being an adult. I was hurting. I was alone. I was lonely. I just kept my house dark. You know, I had blackout curtains in my bedroom, so everything was just dark. And it was dark. After about 3 months of this, I called a friend of mine. I thought my sister called her, friend I grew up with. I thought my sister called her. I only found out a few months ago I was the one who called her. And I asked her, I said, Shell, I said, can you come over and hold my hand? That's how much I just craved human contact. She came over. She saw me. Her dad was a preacher too, so she preached to me. Didn't do any good. You know, she came over, she cleaned me up, she cleaned my house, she cleaned my sheets, and I guess she started this networking calling with my sisters. I found this out later, so I'm thinking I'm hiding all of this from my family, my sisters that are out of town. She was the only one that saw me like that, but she called them and let them know exactly what was going on. Then there was rehab talk. Then there was calls from my sisters. You need to get into rehab. I don't remember much of that. I was busy drinking. And you know, she did all this for me, and I cared now. I didn't care then. She cleaned all my sheets, got me all cleaned up and everything. It was nice, and I think it took her an hour to comb the mats out of me. I don't know what alcohol does to long hair, but and I got up and I snuck out of the bed and she's in my living room on the phone and she like looks at me like, do you think you're going? I'm like, so I thought I was invisible. I just went to the freezer and I got the vodka and I poured a shot and I did it and I poured another shot and I snuck back into my bedroom. And did that second shot, picked blood up all over the clean sheets that she had, and oh, she was mad. She's mad, she's hurt. She told me later, just a couple months ago, that she cried. She thought she was there. I didn't want to go to rehab. I'm like, no, I'm not leaving. I still thought this is really important. I still thought I had control over my drinking. Even then, I thought I still had control over my drinking. I didn't, but I thought I did. I wasn't hurting anyone. I didn't have any more partners, didn't have kids, family's all out of state. Who am I hurting? Am I hurting anybody? Adults are fed. I'm just fine. So she left, and 6 months after my brother died, my mom died suddenly. So it took me 3 days to be able to sober up, get have somebody drive me to the hospital to be with her. But two of my sisters came out. We had the funeral. They went back home. I went back to work. Thank God I didn't lose my job. Because I extended that leave and I didn't do it legally. So they went home. I went back to work and thinking, okay, this is cool. I can go back to being a highly functioning alcoholic again. I can go to work and make money and come home and drink and go to bed and get up and go to work. Only 2 days after I went back to work, I went back to bed. I got up from work and I said, no, not feeling it. Not going to be easy doing the adult thing today. Can't do it. I had vodka, poured myself back in bed. This time, though, was different. This time I said, well, my brother's gone. My mom's gone. This is not a pity party. This is just my thought process. They're both gone, and so what I'm going to do is I'm going to join them. I don't need to be here. I don't have a purpose in life. I always wondered, what was my purpose in life? Never knew. Never figured that out. So I thought, okay, I don't have a purpose anymore. I don't have anybody here I need to take care of. So I'm just going to join them. So 2 weeks. Took 2 weeks of me drinking around the clock and this time not eating. And this time I was bloated. I was puffy. I wasn't using the restroom anymore. Things were shutting down. I was productive even in my really bad drinking. I was reaching my goal. My goal to go to heaven or hell, whatever. To die. That was my goal. So 2 weeks after that, I woke up. I came to. And it was Monday, June 4th, and I knew that I was not going to be waking up that Tuesday, so I knew I had accomplished my goal. So I had a decision to make about it. Did I go ahead and go through with it? Or do I get help? And by help, I don't mean help for my alcoholism, because I hadn't gotten that far yet. I meant help just for my body. And I kind of went back and forth with that all day. And I drank more vodka and thought, well, I'm going to try to sober up like I did before, you know, which is tapering off the vodka. And that didn't work. So I decided I did not want to go ahead and finish my goal. I didn't want to live, but I wasn't sure I wanted to die. So I went to the hospital. I looked around, and that's when I realized, looking back on it now, as I took the second half of step one. I looked around and said, my life is unmanageable. It's look at what I've done to myself. Still wasn't the alcohol's fault, it was my fault. Look what I've done to myself. Look what I created. I've created this mess. So I went to the hospital, and the next night, which is June 5th, 2018, I was laying there in the hospital that evening, and I had this realization come over me that I was going to get better in the hospital, and then I was going to go home, and I knew I had vodka there, and I was going to go home, and I was going to drink, and there was nothing that anybody could do to stop me from drinking, not even myself, and that scared me to death. I have never known a fear like that in my entire life, never. And then it was then I realized I was powerless over alcohol. I took the first half of step one. And that scared me. I am a control freak. I've always been in control. Thought I was. And I didn't know what to do. I asked the hospital people if they had anybody from AA there. They didn't. I didn't know how to find AA. But I knew Google did. So I Googled AA. And I said, you know. And AA pointed me to the Alano Club here in town. So I called the Alano Club. Now, the gentleman that answered the phone that night, we laugh about it. Now, he's not here tonight, but he answered the phone at the Alano Club. And I said, told him my name. And I said, I'm in the hospital. I have a drinking problem. I don't know what to do. I need help. I reached out. I need help. You know that saying that we read that says God could and would if he were sought? I will tell you that before I went to the hospital, I said one prayer that God would send help. I didn't pray for God to help me because I still didn't think he could help me, but I prayed for God to send help. So I called the Alano Club, told them what was going on. I said, I need help. He goes, why are you calling here? And I'm like, he goes, this is the Alano Club. This is not AA. This phone doesn't even hardly ever ring. We don't answer this. Why are you calling here? And I'm like starting to sweat bullets, and I'm like, oh, hell. I said, dude, I don't know. I just know I need help. He goes, okay, hang on. I'll get you help. And I'll tell you what happened after that in a minute, but I want to read something to you guys. There was an AA International Convention in Toronto, Canada in 1965. And an AA member, the theme of the convention was responsibility. And an AA member wrote this for the souvenir book for that convention. We must remember that AA will continue strong only so long as each of us freely and happily gives it away to another person. Only as each of us takes our fair share of responsibility for sponsorship of those who still suffer. For the growth and integrity of our group, for our intergroup activities, and for AA as a whole, it is in taking responsibility that real freedom and the enduring satisfactions of life are found. AA has given us the power to choose, to drink or not to drink, and in doing so has given us the freedom to be responsible for ourselves. As we become responsible for ourselves, we are free to be responsible for our share in AA, and unless we happily accept this responsibility, we lose AA. And for that international convention, this statement was written, and it's still read in AA rooms today, and it's probably my favorite reading. It says, I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. This is what really happened, and this is the important part of my story, because this is the part of my story that really matters. Not the times that I was drunk, not the times that I wanted to die. None of that matters. That's just what led up to this. This is the part that really matters. Remember when I talked about Marshall taking a network, doing some networking calls with all my sisters? Well, behind the scenes, when that gentleman, Brett, told me, hang on, I'll get you help. There was a different type of networking call. There was a call networking going on. I found this all out later. And I will tell you that in that call networking, there were some AA members that took the 12th step, the fifth tradition, and that responsibility declaration that I just read to heart. I took it seriously. If they hadn't taken it seriously, I wouldn't be standing here tonight to carry the message to the alcoholic. That's what they took seriously. And I'm grateful for that. Brett called Patrick, Patrick called Barb and Joyce and Brooke. Within an hour, Barb and Joyce showed up in my hospital room. And they walked in, I was like, whoa, I don't know what these AA people are like, so I don't know what to expect. And I can't run because I got an IV in my arm. But you know, they seemed so relaxed and so peaceful and so matter of fact. And then they said something that was like, no, these chicks are lying to me. They said that they did not have a desire to drink. I'm like, well, how do you guys sleep at night? They said, just fine. And I'm like, I don't know that I believe you. But they seemed pretty sincere. They seemed peaceful. And the fact that one had been sober for X number of years and one had been sober for X number of years, and I thought, wow. And the fact that they didn't know me from Adam. And they left their home in the evening when you should be chilling and relaxing with your families and doing your own thing, your own life, to come out to the hospital to see this person and to carry the message. There was one thing that I remember specifically from that night. And don't worry, I'm almost done. Barb, who is now my sponsor, said two words that gave me, and some of you guys have heard me say this over and over, and I don't care. You're going to hear me say it over and over again for 80 more years. She said to me, and it was the first time I ever had hope that maybe, just maybe, I could be sober. Now I drank more than half my life. I mean, I already had it set up in the nursing home that people would be bringing me alcohol in, making, you know, into. I had this set up. Brooke knows. She was in on it. No. But my sponsor said, and she was just so kicked back. She just goes, Barb said, AA works. That's all she said. AA works. And something inside me flickered to life. And I thought, maybe. And again, they took their responsibility and their sobriety seriously because they carried this message to me. So then I was in the hospital, went home. Now, by this point, a few days had passed, I'd kind of forgotten about that fear. I felt a little stronger, healthier. Barb took me home, walked in the door, said, I think I could go back to having two shots of vodka a night and I'll be okay. Listen very carefully. What I had forgotten was the fear. I forgot the fear of that night on June 5th, the fear that I was powerless over alcohol. I don't ever want to forget that fear ever, 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 ever again. That's why I can't forget the past and I can't shut the door on it. I mean, this is life or death for me. I didn't drink, though. I realized later that while I was in the hospital, God removed the obsession to drink for me. That was a miracle. This lady over here walked by me today and said she's been sober for 21 years. She says it's a miracle. It is a miracle. One day is a miracle. One weekend of me not drinking is a miracle. I didn't drink. I went Monday, went back to work. Wednesday, I hit a meeting and I started meetings. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps, and I got into service. And I'm still doing that today. This is what happened. The ninth step promises are my favorite reading. They came true for me. Anytime anybody reads those in a meeting, I'm mentally going, check, that came true, check, that came true. It came true. I started thawing out. I started feeling, which you guys know is kind of not fun, but sometimes fun. I fell off my pink cloud a couple of times. And it's funny because the gentleman who's not here tonight, he's got 10 years sober. He's in my home group. He laughed when I shared and said I fell off my pink cloud. And I was crying and he laughed. I didn't realize that you could laugh at people. When my character defects started coming out and I went to my sponsor and I said, I am so pissed off. So-and-so in the meeting did this and so-and-so in the meeting did that and it pissed me off and it irritated me and I couldn't hear and they were rattling this and moving around and blah. Barb laughed at me. She goes, your character defects are coming out. I say, my character defects? I'm not the one making all the racket in the meeting where I can't hear. She was right. I want to tell you guys this. This is my last page. Nope, sorry. Back to the last page. I'm almost done. Told you, I was a preacher's kid. This is what AA has given me. A redo on life. Who gets a redo on life? I'm thankful that I'm an alcoholic just because I get a redo on life. Gentleman with 2 days. Who's the gentleman that had 2 days? You're over here somewhere. You're hiding. Back there somewhere. Who gets a redo on life? He does. I did. AA gave me peace. AA gave me serenity. I didn't realize this, but alcohol causes anxiety. I didn't realize that. When I quit drinking, I relaxed more. And I told you earlier, I never understood what my purpose in life was. I now know, thanks to tradition number 5. My purpose in life is to carry the message. To be a service. AA released me from prison that vodka kept me in. I couldn't go anywhere on the weekends because I was drinking. Couldn't go anywhere in the evenings because I had to get home and start drinking. I wouldn't call my family after 6 or 7 o'clock at night because I was drunk and I didn't want them to hear me drunk. AA has given me my AA family who understand me and connect with me better than my blood family. It's given me my health back. I've grown. I mean, you know, not this way, but I've grown. It's given me tools and knowledge on how to live life. Live life, not just exist through life, but actually live. It's given me a better relationship with my family. I was telling somebody, I think it was last night, it's like I've fallen in love with my family all over again. And they're crazy and dysfunctional and whatever, what family isn't? But I've fallen in love with them again. I get to be present. And I've got this most awesome 10-year-old niece that lives in Oregon. And I get to watch her and every little thing that she does, and it amazes me. She's just amazing. I get this because I'm sober. I get this because I'm in AA. I get this because God delivered me from drinking. I get this because you guys saved my life. I don't have to be ashamed anymore. I don't have to hide. I don't have to sneak out somewhere and carry a bottle like this with vodka in it and take sips off of it. I get to make amends for my wrongs today, knowing that people will believe me for the most part and accept it, and it's not just a wait till she's drunk again. I get to hold my head up high because they teach us here in AA, we're not to be trampled on. We're not a doormat. We get to hold ourselves, our heads high. We're worth something. I actually do sleep. I go to bed, I get sleepy, I go to sleep, and I just don't crawl in bed and pass out anymore, and I sleep better. I actually get to have fun being sober. I didn't know. The first time I took my boat out, I thought, oh dear God, I'm not going to have any fun. I don't have beer, I'm on vodka. I have fun being sober. As long as I've got my Diet Coke, I have. There's. You can have more fun being sober. I have more fun being sober. I have courage now that I didn't have before. I get to help others. I have a lot of joy. not just surface joy. I'm learning to love myself. After 49 years, I'm actually learning to love myself, and it's sincere. AA has given me confidence, not just fake confidence. The third step, like Kim said, is my favorite step. When I did the third step, it released all of my burdens, hurts, pains, fears, insecurity. I just gave it all to God, and I felt such a relief, like just this thing lifted off of me. And I did learn, my sponsor told me, and I learned that all the answers to life are in the big book. And that's true, because I've tested it. I came to believe in a power greater than myself, and that same power restored me to sanity and removed my obsession to drink. That's the greatest gift that AA has given me. I call that power God. I am not special. I'm the same as you. I thought I was special. My sponsor told me I wasn't. I realized what she meant by that. I'm exactly like everyone in this room. And I will tell you this. If you're new and you want it, see, when I first came into AA, I wanted to go out and round up everybody who needed AA and drag them into the rooms and make them stay and give them what I had and give them what other people had. It's a want-it program, not a need-it program. I've learned that as well. If you want what I have, if you want what others around you have, if you really, really want it, you can and will receive the same gifts that I've received. I promise you. I swear to God. But you gotta want it. I wanted it. And I hope to God I always want it. And I hope to God I never forget that fear. I'm Lynette, and I'm an alcoholic.
Can we give her another round of applause?